Hello, it is September 6th, 2016. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 610 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. It is NFL week. I don't know if anyone has heard this. The NFL, it is a rather large entertainment conglomerate in which basically almost everyone I know is involved in sports media, including people that have absolutely nothing to do with the NFL whatsoever. It continues to be the reason most of them are employed. The NFL runs everything financially in the world of sports, and it's also kind of fun, even if it's sometimes kind of evil, a lot of times kind of evil. It's still very enjoyable. And so we are doing a two-part podcast this week to preview the NFL season. The first part today, I'm happy to help welcome as my guest, Andrea Hanks. She is the NFL writer for Sports on Earth and the comeback. She's a host of the F-Ball podcast, which you can find on iTunes along with all other podcast devices. Andrea, thank you for coming on with me.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
I'm excited. So what we're going to do with you today, first off, I always forget to say this at the beginning of the podcast. Please subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a review. It helps people find the review. Helps people find the podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Okay, fine. Got that out of the way. You're better at that on your podcast of like saying, hey, come find us. I always feel weirdly guilty about it. So anyway, what we're going to do with you, by the way, follow her at fball_Andrea, FBALL_ANDREA. Phew. All right, done. So we're going to go through the AFC today. We're going to go through the AFC. I'm going to talk about my picks. I trust your judgment on this, so I'm just going to say, I'm going to ask very incisive, cutting, difficult questions like, hey, what do you think of the AFC North? And stuff like that, and then you can just go. But I'll interject to be obnoxious and annoying sometimes. So first off, I want to talk about a division that you know well, and that is the AFC North. Now, I have questions on each team, but I'm going to start with Pittsburgh.
All right.
When it comes to Pittsburgh, this feels like one of those offenses that everybody is crazy excited about, but will end up either an injury or something will make it fall short. Do you think Pittsburgh is a favorite in this division? And if so, will they save us the trouble of having Cincinnati play another playoff game and lose?
I do think that the Steelers are kind of the class of the division right now, particularly because of that offense, like you mentioned. Granted, things are not as explosive, let's say, as they were last year. Martavis Bryant obviously suspended for the entirety of the season. No Le'Veon Bell for the first couple of games as well. But for the latter, that might be a good thing. He's coming off of a significant knee injury, so a little bit more rest might have been something that was in the cards for the Steelers to begin with. So it's just sort of a circumstance that was forced upon them. And when you think about, you know, D'Angelo Williams backing him up, he had a really good season last year in place of Le'Veon Bell, and I would expect the same this year. The real question is, who's the receiver that's stepping up in place of Martavis Bryant? And it seems like it's going to be a group of guys. Sammy Coates is in his second year. He's still struggling with drops, but he knows the offense a little bit better, obviously. Marcus Wheaton might have a nice little breakout season. Darius Heyward-Bey is someone who they trust with the deep ball and on special teams. And there's a guy to keep an eye on, Eli Rogers. They really liked him last year. He got hurt in the preseason, spent the year on injured reserve, has looked really good this preseason, and seems to be on path to make that 53-man roster. So you put all those guys together, and, you know, as long as you have that key with Ben Roethlisberger staying healthy, this is still a really strong offense.
And poor Cincinnati. The thing you forget about Cincinnati's playoff loss last year, not only did they lose – and not only did they lose in just the dumbest, saddest way possible, but they did it to the Steelers. And a Steelers team with Big Ben who could barely stand at that point, it was clearly kind of ready to lose. And why are they better this year? Are they worse this year? Are we going to be in the same spot with them next year? I mean, they won the division last year. Like, theoretically, they should, if we're putting Pittsburgh, I guess they're taking a step back. But do you look at Cincinnati and think this team is better or worse? Did they miss a big opportunity last year?
I think they did miss a big opportunity last year, but you also have to think at the same time, Andy Dalton was hurt. He had that injured thumb, so there was no guarantee that he'd be ready to go if the Bengals had beat the Steelers in that game, which was really unfortunate because everything seemed to be adding up last year for the Bengals to go pretty far. I mean, I wouldn't have trusted Andy Dalton and that offense if they ended up in the AFC Championship game against the Denver Broncos, just because that defense was just so brutal at the end of last season. I really like the Bengals defense in particular. They still have a lot of talent, a lot of depth. What I'm curious about is what happens with the offense because, you know, Marvin Jones moved on to the Detroit Lions. Mohamed Sanu went on to the Atlanta Falcons. So it's a whole new world, essentially, on offense for Andy Dalton. So he's got new guys he needs to, you know, create a on-field rapport with. Hugh Jackson has left, former offensive coordinator, now head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Might not have tight end Tyler Eifert for the first 4 weeks of the season, and that's a guy who scores touchdowns and has a really good chemistry with Dalton. So I'm curious to see what happens with that offense when you have a new mix of guys and they're catching passes. And you know, it's you know, the offensive coordinator is the longtime quarterback coach there, so it's a guy who's been working with Dalton, and it's not going to be that much change in offense, but you're going to get some differences when you're changing that you know, coaching position. So I'm curious to see exactly what that does for the offense, but I feel a step back there is going to be taken.
Yeah, I'm always wondering, for Bengals fan at this point, would you rather just bottom out a little bit and like build in a staff? It really just seems cruel when you really take a step back from it, but
it is.
Yeah, it is cruel, but that's, you know, it's a mean game. It's a mean thing that does mean things to people, but it's fun.
Sure.
That's why we like it. So okay, Baltimore, you know, it looks like they were already very old and kind of aging out a little bit. Then Ben Watson got hurt, and now they've got that issue. This, am I wrong to think that this team looks like, speaking of teams that should start over, like they're really a step away? It feels like, whatever your thoughts about Cincinnati, both them and Pittsburgh are pretty far ahead of Baltimore right now.
Yeah, and it's sort of unfortunate because it's these injuries that have piled up. Last season it was incredible in terms of starters getting hurt in Baltimore. I mean, you're talking about Terrell Suggs and Steve Smith, eventually Joe Flacco, Justin Forsett, guys upon guys upon guys getting injured. And now you have, you know, Ben Watson and Kenneth Dixon, two tight ends who are injured. You know, Max Williams has been banged up over the summer. Dennis Pitta also, you know, coming off of two really devastating back-to-back hip injuries. So you sort of have questions at that tight end position. It's sort of funny. Everybody's coming into the summer saying, oh, you know, the Ravens have so many tight ends, you know, man, they're going to have to cut some guys, and other teams that need tight ends are going to be able to, you know, kind of pick up some scraps at the end of the summer. And now, you know, they're kind of leaning on Crockett Gilmore, who's a quality tight end. But when you're leaning essentially on one guy, that creates a problem. So I am concerned about that. I'm impressed by Joe Flacco's return from injury. I mean, we're talking about a significant knee injury at the end of the season, and he's coming back pretty much 100% healthy, you know, at the start of training camp. So, you know, you got to tip your hat to him. But you have to worry about the impact of last year's injuries, how they're going to linger into this season, and what that's going to mean for the Ravens for the future. But if they're, you know, if they need to rebuild and they need to think about the future and restocking that cabinet, if you will, you got Ozzie Newsome, and it's hard not to trust him. I mean, that's a guy who finds guys out of nowhere, free agents in the draft everywhere, and finds a lot of talent. So that's something to keep in mind, that if they have to reload at some point after this season, it's hard not to trust the people in charge there to do a good job of it.
Okay, so you know so much about so many teams, but I feel like a team obviously you know very well is the Cleveland Browns. And now Cleveland, imagine a lot of people that you talk to or you interact with or whatever you do, they're like, yeah, save it with Cleveland.
We don't, sure. Wait.
I am not one of those people. I love Cleveland. I find myself a Browns. The Browns are my secret. It would make me so happy for so many people if they were to do something. This is not the year, but do you see signs of them, of the Paul De Podesta brain trust, whatever they've got going over there? Do you see at least some signs of, okay, they might not be good right now, but they may maybe eventually possibly could be potentially going in the right direction, or at least looking in the right direction?
They're definitely building something for the future. You look at the 2016 draft, 14 picks. I'm not saying all those guys are going to make the roster, but when you're in a world where 50% of draft picks will make a roster, that's seven guys. And normally teams are not going to get seven rookies. out of their draft haul. So that's a good thing. They have a lot of draft picks next year. They're amassing draft picks in 2018. So they are planning something for the future. Whether they'll get that opportunity, considering what we've seen so far out of the Jimmy Haslam ownership era mm-hmm. in Cleveland, is yet to be known, yet to be seen. But there are encouraging signs. Everybody talks about culture change. When you think about the Cleveland Browns, every time a new coaching and front office staff takes over. But right now it actually seems legit. It doesn't seem just like lip service. I mean, just even the little things. Barkevious Mingo, traded to the New England Patriots, speaks to the media this week and says, I'm in a class act organization now. You know, this is a team that knows how to win. But he did say, you know, it's unfortunate that he's not with the Browns. He does see them trending in that direction. And that's typically not what somebody says, a former Brown, when they move to another team. You usually hear it was chaos. It was depressing. It was miserable. Mm-hmm. So that's an encouraging sign. And I think that there are a lot of positive building blocks for the Browns. And I do hope the best for them, just because you talk about long-suffering fan bases. I mean, could there be any more?
Buffalo's maybe got an argument. Minnesota's maybe got one. But, man, Cleveland is. What is the I did a series of stories a while back on the city of Cleveland, and my favorite thing was the guy who, when he was buried, said he wanted six Cleveland Browns players to drop him in to the graveside, because so the Cleveland Browns could let him down one last time, which I thought was a very nice touch. Though I think it speaks to that man's general optimism, the idea that the Browns could in fact let him down still would show yes. that he still believes. So okay, so you have Pittsburgh in this division. I'm curious, do you have is your order Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Baltimore, Cleveland?
That is correct. But I think Cleveland could nudge out Baltimore, depending on what the health situation is. And also, I think Cleveland has a potential to have a very explosive offense this year. RG3, Terrell Pryor, Josh Gordon after the 4-game suspension, Corey Coleman, Duke Johnson, Hugh Jackson and his creative use of offense. So that's something to keep in mind, is that Cleveland might not excel in the win department, but they're going to be a tough out, I think.
Oh, good. That's all I ask. That's all I ask is for them to be not miserable. And when people leave, they don't go, it's a madhouse over there. It's horrible. I'm so glad I escaped. Baby steps. Okay. Let's jump to the AFC. Let's go west. By the way, do you have Cincinnati winning a wild card or no?
I think so. I think okay. Cincinnati still has the ability to get to a wild card spot. Yeah.
Great. Then go through that again. Awesome.
Yes.
Okay. AFC West. Certainly, I like to remind everyone, I'm an Illinois person who loves to make fun of Northwestern football. So I would like to note that Pat Fitzgerald, college football coach who everyone thinks is a genius, had a NFL starting quarterback on his team, his juniors and senior year, and didn't go to a bowl game either time. So tell me why Trevor Siemian is going to make Northwestern look silly. Is that the right call? What is Denver doing? What are they putting together here? Explain that move to me and kind of what they've got pointed up.
You know, I actually don't. I don't know what Trevor Siemian is going to bring to the Denver Broncos this year, except for the fact that he's the guy who appears to have won the job for now. I mean, Paxton Lynch, at some point, maybe this season, maybe in the future, it seems like they're very interested in having him be the starter. I think it really speaks more to where Mark Sanchez is right now in his career, more than anything. But I think what they're thinking is, sort of what happened last season. You know, Peyton Manning was playing hurt, wasn't playing very well. They put in Brock Osweiler, completely untested quarterback, has 7 starts, plays all right. You know, and then once it's crunch time, it's the playoffs and Peyton's healthy, they put him back in, they get to the Super Bowl. But really the story is the run game and particularly that defense. And that defense has lost some guys over free agency. It was a very expensive spring for a lot of those former Broncos, and Denver wasn't going to pay up. But I think that defense, I mean, we've seen it in the preseason, just still looks so brutal. And I think what they're leaning on is, we're going to get Paxton Lynch ready for whenever he's ready, this year, next year, whatever. And we're going to lean particularly on that defense again. Whether or not it'll work, We'll have to wait and see, because there is a big difference between Peyton Manning and Trevor Siemian. I don't know about how the what the difference is between Trevor Siemian and Brock Osweiler, and that's something to keep in mind. But, you know, that's going to be the question, is how this quarterback is going to react to defenses, on top of the fact of how other quarterbacks can react to this defense.
Yeah, and that's the thing, of course, Denver having that terrific defense. But certainly if I'm another team in this division, I'm like, all right, Trevor Siemian, I feel like there's a window for us. Who's the team most likely or most optimized to take advantage of that window if Denver does fall back?
I would say the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, they're very solid on offense. You know, even with Jamaal Charles coming off of yet another knee injury. I mean, they proved last year with Charcandrick West and the other guy whose name I can't remember, running the ball when Charles was injured. You know, they can still do that with the offense, no matter who's out there. Alex Smith is a guy that I trust with the football, which is the reason why he's a starting quarterback. I mean, Andy Reid would say that he's a guy I trust with the football. And they have a very good defense, and they have for quite a few years now, and it's still quite good. So I would say the Kansas City Chiefs would be, in particular, the biggest threat to Denver, especially when you think about that defense twice a year, Trevor Siemian. It might be a little rough.
Yeah. And people are excited about Oakland, right? Like, it's fine. I don't mean to sound coarse, but, you know, it does seem that when Al Davis, who was a Hall of Famer and did a lot of great things for the NFL, I don't mean to play otherwise, but it did seem when maybe when he died and it was not necessarily making every decision or looming over every decision, they started to act more like a normal NFL team. And I think we've seen the fruits of that a little bit. Could they make a jump forward?
Absolutely. You know, I think Derek Carr is one of the best young quarterbacks in the league. I enjoy watching him play. You know, it looks like he's, not to use one of those cliches, but it looks like he's having fun out there. And why wouldn't he? I mean, he's throwing to a guy like Amari Cooper. Any quarterback is going to really enjoy that. And, you know, then you have Michael Crabtree, who is also another, you know, very, very talented wide out. And I think that, you know, that defense, you know, Khalil Mack, all these guys on defense don't make it easy as well. So I think that they're going to have a really strong season. I don't know if it's going to be good enough to make the playoffs, just because you're dealing with Denver and Kansas City in the division, and then other teams like Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, New England, things like that in the AFC. But I think that this is a really strong team. This could be a situation where the Raiders are a 10-6 team that just don't make the playoffs just because of what the situation is just throughout the conference.
Oh man, that would be so mean.
I know.
If Oakland gets to like 10-6, or like Buffalo, we'll get to Buffalo in a second, but a team like Buffalo or Oakland gets a 10-6 and still doesn't make the playoffs. That happened to the
Browns. It was their year with Derek Anderson or whatever.
Oh,
and
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Derek Anderson. I forgot about Derek Anderson. He was really good that year. He had that one good year. And then he went to Arizona and became Derek Anderson again. San Diego, hey, still in San Diego. So there is something. Phillip Rivers, I feel like, because never really had a big postseason moment, but they were, you know, he is, I feel like, for his career, generally kind of underrated or underappreciated. But it doesn't really look like this team right now, not just with the off-field upheaval and so on, but it doesn't look like things are trending right for them right now.
It doesn't. It's sort of unfortunate. I mean, there was definitely a time when I was really big on the Chargers when Schottenheimer was the coach and LaDainian Tomlinson was out there, and then he goes 13-3, and because they needed a Super Bowl or else, he gets fired, and it hasn't been the same since. So that's a lesson. And, you know, there's been all kinds of questionable things that have gone on with the way the Chargers handle the business of football, and we're seeing kind of the fruits of that on the field. You know, Phillip Rivers, I agree with you. I think he's an underrated quarterback. I think sort of up until the past couple of years, I'd say in that kind of Carson Palmer sense of like, well, he was going to be great. He wasn't great. Is he great? But yeah, I think that window closed a few years ago, and I think that it's going to take a lot to open it. It just there's so many little issues that the Chargers keep having, whether it's the defense can't rush the passer, or they have troubles in coverage, or somebody gets hurt, somebody else gets hurt, or the O-line can't protect. And then all these things add up and you end up with, you know, a 7-9 season, a 6-10 season.
Oh, exciting. But hey, they're still in San Diego.
Oh yeah, they're still in San Diego, and I hear it's beautiful all year round there. So who needs football?
Yes, exactly. I was in San Diego for 4 days and still couldn't figure out what the stadium was. So
you know, you're not the first person I've heard say that. That's interesting.
Yeah, because I mean, San Diego has a very clearly delineated downtown, and like the airport is downtown, but then the football stadium is totally really far away. So which I guess is the way it works when you have to put 70,000 people in one space.
Yes.
All right, let's move to the AFC South. I forgot your prediction. South. we'll finish up with the rest. Do you have Denver winning the division?
I do have Denver winning the division, and then I have Kansas City as a wild card in the playoffs, but also Oakland could squeeze in there, depending.
All right. Okay. Then we go. Now we'll go to the AFC South, and we're going to go to the AFC South. I have one question about this league, this division, and it is, I have a couple more, but one big one.
Sure.
I so desperately want, and I mentioned this in my preview of the AFC South, I followed the St. Louis/Phoenix/Arizona Cardinals for a very long time from the Midwest, and was unable, after they left in 1987, unable to find any merchandise, any acknowledgement that the Cardinals existed, let alone played in the largest sports league in the United States. That is generally, there's always that one team that seems to just never have anything go right, and not even like does even rise to the level of breaking your heart a little bit. It's just kind of there. So I always have a soft spot in my heart for that team. I find myself wish casting Jacksonville to be good this year. Now I know that they kind of got one more year. I guess Bradley kind of got one more year here. They've kind of done a slow build. They look to me better than a couple of years ago in the division. That does not blow me away. If I wish cast really hard, can they at least have a chance to win this division?
You aren't the only one wish casting. I feel like the past like 2-3 summers that I like when I've been doing my podcast, and I'm just like, this is the year the Jaguars turn the corner, and then it doesn't happen. And I don't know why. I mean, they keep amassing talent. They keep drafting well. I think they keep handling free agency really well in terms of, they've had a lot of money to spend, and they have spent on certain guys, but I think that it hasn't been stupid spending. They're not just flinging money because they have to. And I think there's – and I like Gus Bradley as a coach. I think that he has a lot of potential, and it definitely seems like his players were – immediately bought in, even though his seat is probably among the hottest of coaches going into the season. I there's so much to like here, offensively, defensively, but yet I keep doing this every year. This is the year. But you look at this division and it's up for grabs. I mean, it's sort of like the NFC East, where it's just like, okay, who's it going to be this year? Who's it going to be this year? Half of you guys are going to be 8-8. Maybe three of you are going to be 8-8. Who's it going to be? Maybe you could win this division at 9-7. And if you can win the division at 9-7, why not Jacksonville? Why not?
All right. Well, good. Good. Therefore, I don't need to talk about any other teams. They're winning it. They're winning the Super Bowl. This is going to be fantastic. It'll be Arizona-Jacksonville Super Bowl. Who are you picking to win this division if you're not actually picking Jacksonville?
I really want to pick Jacksonville.
I know you do.
I really do. But I'm sort of leaning Tennessee, and I don't know if I'm just eating that summertime hype. Because Tennessee is a team that has, just yawn. I'm just going to yawn. Like that's how I felt about them for the past couple of years. I mean, they were so bad at what they were doing to the point where I don't think that Jake Locker would have retired unless he wasn't driven to retire by the lack of an offensive line to protect him there, which is sad, but I think an element of truth. But I don't know. I mean, this summer, Mariota is doing better. He's got some good receivers around him. They've got this newfangled, exotic smash mouth run game, which it's a gimmick name. Who cares? But they do have some talented running backs there. Maybe they've got their offensive line house in order. And if they have, great. I still have a lot of questions on the defense because partially, you've got Dick LeBeau there, And, you know, I've spent a lot of time covering the AFC North, and he spent a lot of time with the Steelers. And in his final seasons there, I had a lot of criticisms for him because I think that his defensive style hasn't evolved alongside way, you know, offense has been played in the NFL. And I feel like he's kind of easy to figure out at this point. His blitzes aren't so sharp and unexpected anymore. But I think that there's enough there on that Titans offense, plus the entire situation in the AFC South, that I'm leaning Titans, but I really want it to be Jacksonville, very much so.
I'm okay. You know, I have to say, I was afraid you were going to say Houston or Indianapolis. I'm okay with it, Tennessee. That's okay. I'm cool with that. That is an interesting team as well. Why are you – I'm curious. Why are you so down? Houston has J.J. Watt. Indianapolis has Andrew Luck. So, therefore, because they have these high-profile names that everybody knows, they are really good, right?
You know, because a football team is, of course, more than one guy.
I thought this was golf.
Yes, it's golf. What if this was golf and we're just wrong?
That would make golf a lot more interesting. So what are your thoughts on those two teams? Is there anything that stands out? What are their weaknesses? To me, as long as Brian Hoyer isn't playing quarterback anymore for Houston, that was not actually football, what was actually happening in that playoff game last year. But certainly, both those teams, I think, would be pretty disappointed if they finish behind Jacksonville and or Tennessee.
Absolutely. I mean, they've both those teams have made a lot of investments in a lot of players, whether you're talking about Brock Osweiler and J.J. Watt in Houston or Andrew Luck and all the things they were trying to do to help him there. Unfortunately, in Indianapolis, the Achilles heel there is to me, it's the GM. It's Ryan Grigson. I don't think that he's done a good job of player evaluation and of drafting. You know, they've drafted 9 offensive linemen in the past 4 years, and 4 of their 8 draft picks this year were offensive linemen. And I don't expect anything to come out of it. I don't think Andrew Luck is going to get well protected at all. He's been beaten up the entire time he's been there. You know, you invest so much into this guy who is handed to you basically on a silver platter after Peyton Manning, and you fail to surround him with effective offensive line protection. You fail to surround him with enough wideouts to actually make plays when he throws the ball. You've subjected him to so much punishment that he finally got significantly injured. So I don't know what they're doing there. And the defense. The defense hasn't been there to help bail him out either, whether pass rush, whether in the secondary. So I think that there's been sort of a failure, an administrative failure to help the career of Andrew Luck, which I sound a little angry because I am a little angry. I think it's disrespectful to the guy. I really do, and I think it's a mismanaged organization. When you look, have you looked at Ryan Grigson? You've seen a picture of him,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Yeah, he looks like a guy that Jim Irsay would hire.
Oh, I love it. Well, I have to say, if you can't, particularly in this division, when you have a talent like Andrew Luck and can't build around him, you probably don't deserve a job for very long. How about Houston? Is Osweiler what? Like, it does seem. Already you're getting a sense that, we really gave that guy a lot of money.
Yeah, and I understand it because if you don't have a quarterback, and I mean, that was a major problem with Houston last year. They had a bunch of quarterbacks. Bill O'Brien was like, well, this guy, no, this guy, no, this guy. When you have that many quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterbacks. Right. So I understand that they wanted to find a guy. They wanted to have their guy. They didn't want apparently they did not want a rookie. They wanted somebody with starting experience in the NFL. But when you talk about starting experience in the NFL, he started 7 games last year. That's not a particularly large sample size to give this kind of money to him. And that I think was the motivating factor for John Elway in Denver to not give Osweiler a deal akin to what the Texans gave him. And I personally think that, you know, there should have been kind of like a chill moment there, you know, and you know, a situation where it could be a 3-year deal or a 5-year deal, but you have some opt out or you have some void after the first year. So you're not locked into this guy because he's not who you think he was. And so that's what I'm concerned with, is that the Texans got so desperate to find a guy that they really flung some money at a guy that is in my opinion, not very proven. I mean, he was bolstered by that defense in Denver, and there is a very good defense in Houston, but it's not as good as Denver's. And he was bolstered by that run game in Denver, and Houston looks the, you know, with Lamar Miller there, looks like they're going to have a good run game, but maybe not as good as Denver's. You know, he's got some quality receiver talent, DeAndre Hopkins and so on. So yes, and he had that in Denver. But when, you know, you compare what he has now to what he had in Denver, I don't know if Osweiler is going to be all that great. I don't know. I don't feel it. I'm not feeling it.
Wow. So you're picking Tennessee in this division.
It's just sort of.
Sort of. That's fine.
Jacksonville, 1A.
Yeah, oh, I love it. That would be so great. All right. Okay. Let us wrap up with the AFC East. Speaking of teams we find ourselves cheering for because things go poorly for them all the time.
Yes.
New England. No. Talking about Buffalo, of course. I have much family in Buffalo, so I find them they're very close to my heart. It was funny. It feels like Buffalo and the Jets, particularly with the way that season ended, where Buffalo knocking the Jets out of a playoff spot, feels like they're very connected in this division, not just because of Ryan, of course, also coaching at the Jets, but they feel like not even that dissimilar of teams, with kind of defensively oriented. I think maybe Buffalo has a better quarterback. Maybe. Who do you like above those two teams to be a little bit better? And then we'll get into the sad sack Patriots.
You know, it's difficult to say because I like both offenses for different reasons. I'm so happy for Tyrod Taylor. I'm happy for Ryan Fitzpatrick as well. The offseason of, you know, everybody saying in Buffalo, we're not going to think about paying Tyrod Taylor until after 2016. And then they finally did it. Good. Because he was being criminally underpaid to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. It's not worth it. He could have just been like, no. He actually had some leverage there. Because what are you going to do? Right. EJ Manuel? Cardale Jones? Yeah, good luck. And the same thing with the New York Jets, why they play in this game with Fitzpatrick with this contract all spring and summer long, acting like Geno Smith is going to be the starter. And now he might not be even the number two in the depth chart. Fun times.
Yes.
So, you know, but I like both of these offenses. You know, you're talking about with the New York Jets, Eric Decker and Brandon Marshall, who combined to be the top receiving tandem in the league last year. That's a pair of guys that are going to continue to help out Ryan Fitzpatrick this season. I really like the Jets defense. It's hard not to. It's always been their strength. You know, even now that we've moved past the Rex Ryan era and we're in the Todd Bowles era, it's still a quite effective defense. And the Bills can boast the same, though. I'm nervous about the addition of Rob Ryan with Rex.
Yes.
Sitting there, you know, saying that the Saints were stymieing his defensive style. Like, that's trouble. You're stirring up trouble when you say that, because if the Bills' defense doesn't look good, takes a step back because he's there, then people are going to say, oh, nice excuse about the Saints. Looks like the problem might be you.
Right.
So it's interesting. They're very analogous teams. I you're right. There's a lot in common there.
But either one of them, even with Tom Brady out for reasons, I don't even have the report in front of me or a chart as to why he's missing his first four games. I'm sure there's a good reason.
It's like 250. We'll find out after about 250 pages of something or other.
Yes.
Yeah.
But even regardless of the first four games, are the Patriots still the heavy favorites in this division? I keep forgetting that Brady is 39 years old, which, of course, is not old. I'd like to be very on record about that.
No, it's not old.
But,
you're right.
But I will say that certainly for a quarterback, it's on the high end of the age scale. Do they have what it takes to be a Super Bowl contender this year once Brady gets back?
Absolutely. All I've been hearing all summer long about the New England Patriots and their training camp is how talented, how much talented depth they have. They haven't made a lot of personnel moves over the course of the summer like teams are, you know, constantly doing, cutting guys, signing guys. They have so much talent, it's gonna be really hard for them to whittle it down to 53 men. So that means that not only do they have a talented starting defense, they have talented backups. Talented starting O-line, talented backups. Talented receivers, talented backups. Plethora of tight ends featuring Rob Gronkowski and a bunch of backups. You know, obviously the question is Jimmy Garoppolo, but when you have so many other quality pieces to the puzzle there, it minimizes how much weight he's going to have to carry over those first four games. The thing just to keep in mind, granted, three of those first four games where Brady's out are home games, but two of them are against the Dolphins and the Bills. So, you know, it could make things interesting in the division, depending on what the Patriots do in those two divisional games. You know, if they're going 2-2, but the two games they win at the Cardinals and against the Texans, if those are the two games they win and the two games they end up dropping are against the Dolphins and the Bills, that makes things a little bit interesting. But at the same time, yes, Tom Brady's 39 years old, and he gets the first quarter of the season off,
yeah.
And he gets to come back with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, yeah. It's certainly, yeah. You know, you're seeing this more and more in sports of people and teams giving players off. You saw this with LeBron James, you saw this with Bryce Harper this year. Like, they're mm-hmm. giving people guys games off, not because they're not being like, with as much money we're paying them, he should play every game. It's like, no, give him time off.
No,
let them
exactly.
relax, and they'll be better. And I think Brady will go in that realm as well. Kind of wrapping up with Miami. Things didn't go quite the way they were hoping to last year, particularly with Ryan Tannehill. Do you think they're the worst team in this division?
I do, actually. It's the Dolphins to me are sort of like how I've been feeling about the Titans over the last few seasons. It's sort of like a yeah, right. You know, Ryan Tannehill is a perfectly serviceable quarterback, but I don't see it. I think that his ceiling is really limited, and I think that we've perhaps already seen it. I mean, it's great to have Adam Gase there. You know, let's see if that really makes a difference. But you're also dealing with a run game there that, you know, you have Jay Ajayi and so on, but you're sort of focusing your hopes on Arian Foster, which, you know, that can go either way, because when he's good. And when he's not, he's hurt. And, you know, after that, if you're just managing it with Jay Ajayi, I don't know if that's going to be enough. I don't know. It's just weird. And I think part of the problem, you know, is you got, you know, front office and coaching turmoil. I mean, there's been so many changes just while Tannehill's been there at quarterback that it doesn't help anybody involved. And you know, people talk about the Browns, 25 quarterbacks or whatever since 1999. It's been like 17 quarterbacks since Dan Marino or something like that for the Dolphins. You know, and there's been so many coaching changes, so many front office changes. I think there are these high and unmanageable expectations that make them make weird decisions. And I don't know. It's hard to feel it with the Miami Dolphins.
All right. So you have New England winning the division. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So even with that, so great. It's nice to see them get some primetime exposure.
Oh yeah, you know they're such a flying under the radar team for so long.
You give them a chance. Give them a chance. They can fly. Okay. So to review your predictions, you have Pittsburgh winning the AFC North and Cincinnati as the wild card. Tennessee, awesomely winning the AFC South. New England winning the AFC East, and Denver winning the AFC West with Kansas City as the wild card. So tell me, who is going to play in the AFC Championship game, and who is going to win it?
I think it's going to be the Steelers and the Broncos, and I think the Steelers get the edge there. Granted, we're talking about starters healthy on both sides here. And they're going to face those Arizona Cardinals in that Super Bowl.
All right, one foot down. I will scream. I'll be glad to have that relived over and over and over.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great.
As if I'm going to complain about the Arizona Cardinals making the Super Bowl.
I want it for Bruce Arians. I want it for Carson Palmer. I want it for everybody there. I had Cardinals Bengals as the Super Bowl last year. So
here's one question before we wrap, because this has been great. But I know we're just talking about the AFC. But you know, I find myself asking. You know, I watched Max Hall play a lot of games at quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. So I've been through a lot of lean times.
Yes.
And so I'm way too close to the Arizona Cardinals really to have any sort of perspective, not only about how good they are, but even how people see them. They seem to me, and maybe I'm just too close, they seem to be, and that's why I'm asking you, a football expert, whereas I am a football dabbler. People they haven't turned into like the Patriots or anything. Do people still like it? People still like the Arizona Cardinals even though they're good, or are they becoming the bad boys yet?
I have a friend who likes to gamble, and he said about a month ago that he was going to have the Cardinals be his NFC championship pick because he felt like they were under the radar. And I was like, well, they're not under the radar because I've been picking them for the Super Bowl for the past like 3 years. And then I realized, oh, right, because also I do this football thing for a living. So I think they're still underrated. I think people look at it and they go, oh, Carson Palmer, yeah, he's just, his knee is just whatever. Yes,
which, you know, is an understandable thing.
And Larry Fitzgerald, he's old. And, oh, all they do on defense is blitz. And people only care about them because people think Bruce Arians is cool. But this is, to me, this is a deeply talented team. You know, so much to like, offense, defense, you know, run game, passing game, coaching. And I mean, you can't underestimate the importance of coaching. And a guy like Bruce Arians, I think that 10 out of 10 players in the NFL, whether they have ever even played for him or met him, would want to play for him. This is a very good team. It's a very good team.
And they're not disliked yet. No one's turned on them yet.
I don't think so. I think the only way that someone would turn on them is if they do get to the Super Bowl this year and people get like Bruce Arians fatigue, yeah, where everybody's just like, oh, right, cool coach. Oh, here comes cool coach again. I think that,
yeah, I
think
totally
that would do it.
That.
But I think that there's too much like feel good about the Cardinals in terms of Carson Palmer, you know, getting his career resurgence there. Larry Fitzgerald being a perennial good guy in the NFL near the end of his career. Tyrann Mathieu and the redemption project and also coming back from his injury. I think there's a lot of feel good there that will stave off any of that sort of, how the Patriots are viewed or the Cowboys.
Yeah, maybe this is just my St. Louis Cardinals baseball fandom. I'm always looking over my shoulder for the backlash. It comes out of nowhere and you don't know, you're not ready for it. And all of a sudden everybody hates you. So
yeah, the Arizona Cardinals are not the St. Louis Cardinals just yet.
Yes. All right. That's good to know. All right. Well, thank you. This has been great. By the way, you have to bear with me for the last thing we do on every podcast until November. I remind everyone that at the end of every podcast, there's a little weekly update, though we're doing two podcasts this week. We look at 538's polls plus forecasts and remind everyone that Donald Trump, former Home Alone 2 star, has a 29% chance of winning the election, according to the 538's Polls Plus model, which is the odds of Adrian Beltre getting a base hit. Or for that matter, Drew Stanton completing a pass. So please stay healthy, Carson Palmer. No offense. I'm sorry, Drew Stanton. I'm sorry. Matt Barkley. Anyway.
There you go.
Anyway, Andrea, this was great. This was awesome. I would love to, if I can talk into it, I'd love to have you on again as we get along later in the year. I found this very enjoyable.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Okay, everyone, of course, make sure to follow her on Twitter at FBALL_ANDREA. And make sure to find the F-Ball podcast on iTunes. If you'd like this football talk, you'll get a lot smarter football talk on that one because I'm not on that one. Anyway, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow, by the way, with Jason B. Hirschhorn. He's also an NFL writer for Sports Nerd and SB Nation. He will be looking at the NFC and better say the nice things about the Arizona Cardinals that Andrea just said. Anyway, have a wonderful week, everyone. Andrea, thank you again. This was great. And otherwise, I'll see everybody tomorrow. Be safe, everybody.